Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Smith, Judge Flaskamp Hallbrooks presiding. The Honorable Carol Hooten presiding.
All right, thank you. This is in the matter of the welfare of the children of CJN, DSH, and EJG, file number 821. 0356 and A21. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes for your oral argument. I understand that that Mr. Lee and Mr. Nolan are splitting their time, and that's already been put on the record with Mr. Lee having 10 minutes and Mr. Nolan having 5 minutes. Our marshal has been advised of this split of time and will adjust the clock accordingly. This matter is being recorded, and so I would request that when referring to the parents, if you would refer to the father, mother, child, and not use their names. But that being said, I would request that the appellant proceed. Please introduce yourself and your client prior to beginning your arguments, and that would be the instruction for all parties. And the appellant may proceed at this time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Matthew Francis. I'm an attorney from Wheaton, Minnesota, representing the appellant, initials CN. This is a case, Your Honors, that should not have resulted in termination of my client's parental rights. The main issue here is the failure of Douglas County Social Services to provide my client with the reasonable efforts that were needed in order to have her reunify with her children. When a court looks at the record, looks at the transcript and the cross-examination of Anna Hughes, who's a social worker involved in this case, you see repeated instances of her admitting that she did not do the one thing that she in her own mind felt was necessary for my client to reunify with her children, which was to admit to what the allegations that were made against her by her oldest son, and that and in order to allow reunification or healing to begin, to take that responsibility, as she repeatedly said during testimony and in her reports.
Well, can I just stop you, because I thought you did a very nice job in your briefing of saying she did this, she did that, she tried to follow a lot of the case plan, and you seem to narrow it down to the one thing she didn't do is say I'm sorry, and she didn't admit she did all this. These things and didn't seem to, and so I think your argument is that since everyone knew that early on, she should have had some therapy or some additional services to help her get over that denial of any fault here. Am I misstating what your position is here?
Nope, you're 100% correct, Your Honor. That is our position.
All right. Well, here's you know, I thought you worked really hard on developing that argument, but I'm looking at the court's order and in an A52 finding, it's finding J on in your addendum.
All right, I'll get there.
And there's a big long paragraph there in finding J. And the court actually goes further than saying that. The court actually sets forth that not only did she not do all of these things that they wanted her to do, but she actually obstructed the services that were provided. And how do you respond to that? I mean, because that seems to be a different scenario that the court found than what you're arguing here today. How do you expect us as a reviewing court to consider this actual obstruction of services that your client exhibited throughout the process?
Sure. And that's actually a very easy question to answer, Your Honor. when the court looks at those findings, and let's just say for the sake of argument, my client had not done any of those things, that my client had not engaged in any of the behavior that the court found that she did, her parental rights still would have been terminated. Okay. This was not, the court did not terminate parental rights primarily because of what you're finding there on paragraph J. Those are things that I would argue to the court, and Your Honor, well, was a district court.
Isn't that kind of speculative though? I mean, because this is, this was a long paragraph, and
sure.
And I noted it because I could see why you were making the arguments you were. Right. I mean, we have someone, your client is saying everything's fine. I have no mental health issues, when everyone's around her is saying, yeah, she has mental health issues, and that nothing was pursued or not reasonably pursued. But I don't know how to, I mean, in addition to the fact that they weren't pursued, I mean, she actually was obstructing services. How does the court, I mean, how can we second guess the court on that? The court actually used this as part of the balancing.
I understand, Your Honor. And again, my response is, aside from what I just said about, and I think the main focus was the other issue, when you look at these things individually, these are not services that my client was being provided. In other words, the IEP was not something that was going on because of this CHIPS case. The IEP was going on already independent of this. The issue with the COPE and the medical appointments, I think the record indicated that my client canceled those because she thought they were supposed to be joint. And in fact, the social worker didn't even notice that they had been canceled for 6 months or 5 months. So again, that COPE was not something that was services that were being provided as part of the CHIPS case. Those are things that were already being signed up. The issue with the glasses, you know, it was kind of a telling thing during the trial. I know there was some, again, the court made its findings, and I don't have sufficient argument to make to the court to overcome the district court's finding as being clearly erroneous. But my client's testimony was the child didn't want to wear his glasses, and there was an exchange between myself and the child when I asked him, because during the trial, the child wasn't wearing his glasses that everyone says he needed. And when I asked him, "Where are your glasses today?" he snapped back at me, "Well, what is it to you? You know, what do you care?" So again, that's not something here. Those three things were thrown in there. Obviously, they make my client look bad. Obviously, those aren't good things. We don't want to have a parent have a finding of fact that they're not doing things that they're supposed to be doing. But
well,
those
that's what my whole point. It goes further than that. I mean, it says, it ends with she threatened caseworkers, the foster
Correct.
Parents,
yep.
and the guardian ad litem. She was sending cease and desist letters. She's filing yep. lawsuits against them.
And
she
those things
repeatedly and deliberately frustrated the efforts to try to unify the parents. And I mean, you very, like I said, you made a great job of saying what you thought was missing here. But
right.
I mean, we have someone here that apparently for a substantial length of time basically was obstructing services. And apparently she wasn't even talking to him for a while, only through her attorney, too. That was the other thing. How is it inappropriate that the court took this into consideration in balancing
right.
Whether the services provided were reasonable?
Everything that you just said, the last tail end there, none of those things happened. And the record's very clear on that. The lawsuit, the threats, all those things, none of that happened until after social services had received permission from the court to stop receiving or stop providing my client with services. All those things happened at the end of April or in May after the court had. So this is a client who is very frustrated by the process. I mean, Your Honors all know, you guys have lots of cases. I represent people on appeal a lot. These are drug cases normally that you're seeing with termination of parental rights. This is a case here that involved one alleged incident of an abuse, a child who didn't want to begin services, family reunification services, when it was recommended by the professional, and the county agreed for that not to happen. And then when it was 2 months later requested, you know, my client objected because there was a known past conflict with that provider. So there's just been a confluence of events here that don't obviously make my client look good. But like I said, those things there that you just mentioned were things that happened after the fact. My client was very frustrated at that time. She didn't have an attorney at that time when she was doing those things. I wasn't her attorney, certainly, because that wouldn't have happened if I was on board. But that was a parent who's very frustrated by the system saying, why don't I have my kids back? I'm not using drugs. I went to the chemical use assessment. I passed all the drug tests. I went to the diagnostic assessment. The guy said I had no mental health issues. Nobody else is telling me I need to do anything else. Tell me what I need to do. I'll do them.
When thanks, said, counsel, may I ask? Thank you.
You ask anything.
Did your client see a therapist herself?
She went to see Peter Hoffman when her children were seeing Mr. Hoffman in January, which she was providing actual services from him. She was doing things with her son, with the younger son, after the older son was seeing him by himself. I believe she might have been seeing the younger son together. You know, and I should add, you know, the younger son and her never had any problems. There weren't any issues that led to the chips, led to the children being removed because of problems with my client with the younger son. It was with the older son. And
well, I asked this question for the fun. Sure. Like, I understand. I think we've, you know, explained well in your brief. And I think Judge Hooten just summarized with you what your sort of theory of the case is. We have children who will remain removed from the home, including because of an incident that the district court found actually occurred, an incident with the older child. Also found, you know, unsafe conditions for both children, I think, being left, going to school, you know, not having like enough food at home, blah, all of those things, right? So there is a basis for removing the children that I think the district court found. There are conditions that led to that. Then there are the services and there is that follow that you're challenging. The issue with respect to the assessment that did not recommend specific therapy actually found, you know, that it probably wouldn't be covered by insurance because, you know, a person can't get therapy that's covered by insurance unless you actually reveal some emotional, behavioral, or other issues that need to be addressed, right? And if she's right, not revealing those in the assessment and there's an honest, you know, response by the assessor that there's nothing to do with this person that will be covered by insurance based on what I'm learning during this assessment. You know, you can't force someone to have therapy to stop them from denying a reality. That's not necessarily a mental health issue. I don't know whether it's a denial, a delusion, or just like false or untrue and a lie. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So yet you're focusing on, I think, that she wasn't directed to particular therapy as if that might have answered the question about whether she acknowledged the unsafe conditions that she had her children in, which would be reasonably required in order to correct those conditions when the children are returned to her, to understand the insight into what the problem was. So
right,
the fact that there wasn't something specifically required based on that assessment, which depends on her, and the fact that you're telling me that she actually, in fact, had therapy, that apparently still didn't lead to acknowledgement of what the issues were in her parenting that led to unsafe conditions, makes me wonder what else you think needed to be done. You can't force someone into therapy on top of her therapy to make that happen.
Right. Well, here's the thing, Your Honor. Again, and maybe I misspoke. I don't know what and I think the record is clear. My client did not receive, wasn't receiving a formal therapeutic setting with respect to these issues that led to the chips from Mr. Hoffman. She was just going there with her sons, dropping them off. And then when the younger child was just the two of them, they would go in together and talk about things. But there was no issue between my client and the younger son. It was my client and the older son. But what Your Honor just said is right on point with the MDO case from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said very clearly, in that case, again, we're dealing with a woman who was convicted of murdering a child, refused to accept the verdict of the court. And then the court social services there said, well, we're not even going to provide you any services because you're refusing to acknowledge that you did what you did. And what a court
was that person that was an assessment made of that person in that case? Were there psychological assessments provided?
I don't recall if there was, Your Honor, in that case, but in this case, and my client was diagnosed, she says that she testified truthfully or gave truthful information to this therapist. And, you know, the record shows that she would go to and do whatever social services asked her to do. The only time she didn't do something was when we had the issue with the family therapist in March, when she objected to the provider, not objected to the family services. You know, she made the appointment with Dina McMahon and kept that appointment. She went to have the DBT assessment when that was recommended to her. So this is not somebody, you know, in the chemical use. And she did all these things on her own. This is, she found Peter Hoffman on her own. This is not somebody who is trying to duck services or not trying to do things. And
right. But I think you just mentioned Peter Hoffman on her own,
right.
And you've also told me that she didn't actually have therapy with him.
Right.
Okay. That's so let's leave him off the table. Yeah. So then the question is I think it's an interplay between what a county can tell someone to do and how mental health services are actually performed by professionals. So there's an assessment that I don't know that is challenged here in terms of, you know, whether it was a competent or appropriate assessment to find that based on what he learned from her being assessed, there is not services that will be available to her because she's denying accurately or not having any mental health or behavioral or emotional issues. So you can't, I don't know how the county can force someone into covered therapy for something that a therapist is saying it's, you know, it's just right. Not available.
If the record, Your Honor, first two things. Number one, Ms. Hughes didn't say that. In her own testimony, she said, I did not find that this was a valid assessment. The guardian item backed that up in her own statements. And so we have the two primary people who are supposed to be looking at services saying this is an invalid assessment. Okay, if you think this is an invalid assessment, then it's your job as the county to go to this person to say, I think you have an invalid assessment. I want you to go to a more thorough psychological evaluation, like a psychometric evaluation, and follow those recommendations. And Ms. Hugh said, I didn't do that because I didn't think she'd be responsive, even though there's no record anywhere that she failed to provide the follow the services that were recommended to her. This is a woman who wanted to get her children back. We don't know what she would have done, but and I know I'm out of time, but the last thing is, as the MDL case made very, very clear, in a situation like this where you have a parent who's not coming to grips with reality, it is the county's duty to offer services until that parent's saying no. They don't get to say, well, I don't think she's going to follow the services because she won't admit. They don't get to back out that way. And that's exactly what happened in MDO. That's exactly what Ms. Hughes did in this case. She gave up. I'll reserve the rest of my time for next. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And I don't know if Mr. Lee or Mr. Nolan will go first.
Your Honor, Mr. Lee, I guess I will go first. For the first 10 minutes, I planned on addressing the biggest issue, the biggest argument as identified by Mr. Franzese. Their biggest argument is against whether there was reasonable efforts or not. Then Mr. Nolan would address the best interest issue.
All right, thank you.
Hello, my name is Dan Lee, and I represent Douglas County Social Services in this matter, the respondent. And as Mr. Franzese has argued about the reasonable efforts and arguing that social services did not make the appropriate reasonable efforts in this matter, one of the things that has not yet been discussed yet today was the issue of intensive in-home therapy and or family therapy. It's been entitled different things. But that clearly, Your Honor, was a very big part of the reunification plan. It was one of the main components of the case plan for Ms. For the mother. And obviously, it's important because of the relationship difficulties that came out during trial between one of the children and the mother, as well as the information that came out during the parenting assessment by the parenting evaluator, the disturbing, concerning conduct that was noticed between the mother and the younger child.
I'm glad you referenced the in-home therapy because it's part of the case plan. And I'm trying to understand when was that offered to mother? I mean, there was an assessment done that determines that probably will not be insurance covered therapy because there's not any disclosure, I guess, of behavioral or emotional issues or mental health issues. And then there's a later parenting assessment. And I think the county also is agreeing. It was the county's view that there should not be family therapy involving the older child. So tell me when the in-home family therapy was offered resisted by mother.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that was offered in March of 2020 when reunification was still going on. It was court ordered at the February 2020 court hearing, which was the review hearing where that was the time when Soul Services indicated that the progress is not going as good as it should here. We want to recommend a parenting attachment, parenting assessment, to try to see what can we do here to make things work better for unification. At that same time, the recommendation was for intensive in-home family therapy. It was actually court ordered in that February order.
So this is in February, and then that's when LSS is offered or suggested by the county as the provider of that service. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And when that was, that being a key component, obviously, to try to reunify in this case, that was really where the mother really fell down here on the most important aspect of the case to reunify, in that she was clearly told, you know, Mr. Franzese has indicated that the social worker, Anna Hughes, should have been more forceful. She should have been more communicative. Tell me when I've done something wrong, you know, to the mother, so I know how to correct it. But in this case, she clearly said she needed the mother to sign those releases so that the referral could be made for that LSS, intensive in-home family therapy. And when Ms. Hughes was told that the mother preferred a different provider, Ms. Hughes checked that out. She checked out at least three different providers, and found out that either it was too long of a waiting list or they couldn't provide the appropriate services needed. And at that point, Ms. Hughes directly relayed that either to the mother or to the mother's attorney, I forget which. And the response was no response. The releases were never signed by mother. And so there was no way that the intensive in-home family therapy could get off the ground. Mr. Franzese has also argued, Your Honor, that maybe this in-home family therapy could have started earlier with Mr. Hoffman, when Mr. Hoffman got involved with the individual therapy of the children in December. But Ms. Hughes perfectly answered a perfectly understandable reason why she did not go with that, because the older child was having some real discomfort with being ready for family therapy, especially with Mr. Hoffman, knowing his contacts with mother. And also, Mr. Hoffman was noted to have saying that in his 25 years, he's seldom seen something to the effect of never seeing kids removed for less evidence. Now, Ms. Hughes was well aware of Mr. Hoffman's thought on that. And Ms. Hughes testified that that was also a factor in not going with family therapy even earlier because of that. Not sure that Mr. Hoffman was fully considering validating the older child's feelings about being ready for family therapy and why the older child was having trouble with wanting to reunify at all with mother. So I think Ms. Hughes was purposely thinking of the best interest of the child in that point, Your Honor. And so then we don't get the family therapy until later being offered, but it was clearly rejected. There's no argument on that. It was just rejected. And if there was a religion-based reason for that, that was never relayed to Ms. Hughes. And I believe the district court judge made a finding as well. That was brought up that perhaps that's why, and that being an even better reason to find some other provider, because they don't want religion being pushed on them. I think that was the argument from mother. But that was never even relayed to Ms. Hughes. And that was a direct finding of that by the district court judge, I believe. So I think Ms. Hughes did everything in her power to try to make in-home family therapy happen, and it didn't happen.
How do you respond to the appellant's argument that this case is controlled by in-rated welfare MDO, that these facts are similar to those facts, and this is a mom who isn't, you know, she doesn't want to admit that she was trying to run her son over with an TV because it could subject her to criminal charges. And
well, I don't claim to have a real thorough understanding of that case, Your Honor, but I think that from what I've seen on it, there are some distinguishable factors in it. First of all, I think I'm reading this from Mr. Franzese's brief. He can correct me if I'm wrong, but that there was a case plan requirement in that case that the mother admit what she had done to the other child, and actually required in the case plan. Now, that is certainly not the case here. That was not a requirement in the case plan for mother in this case. We're simply saying that her willing to be accountable for her actions that led to the breakup of the family here. That's something that's needed internally, something that someone needs to accept some accountability in order to learn from it. And that was not happening here, but it was not a requirement of the case plan. So whether or not someone needs to admit accountability to progress in therapy, that's an open question, I'm sure. But that was not required here. The other thing, social services in this case did attempt services, which I'm not clear from the MDO case if that was even required, or if the county in that case simply said, we're not going to do services because you won't admit that there's a problem. Clearly, there were services here designed to try to aid mother in reunifying here by having therapy that would lead to a better relationship and better behaviors by her with the children, by the diagnostic assessment, as well as by the family therapy that was recommended, and also by the parenting assessment, where social services were searching, even though it was at the 6-month point when that was recommended. And of course, the report wasn't ready until the 8-month point. There's still a 3 or 4 month period in there to try to make time for improvement. If the expert would have said that, it wouldn't have been futile. But of course, the expert said it would be futile to try to fix this based on a mother's attitude. So I think there are distinguishing features from MDO, as I've indicated, not the same case as this one. Your Honor, at this point, I think I've done my 10 minutes, and I would defer to Mr. Nolan to speak to best interest.
Okay, Mr. Nolan.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Thomas Nolan. I represent the guardian ad litem in this matter. My remarks are limited to the best interest findings made by the court, and appellant mother's argument that the court did not possess substantial findings in that best interests of the children require termination of her parental rights. The position of the guardian is that they are not clearly erroneous. As this court is well aware, there are multiple areas of Minnesota statutes that state the best interests of a child in a child protection matter of the paramount consideration. Best interests are defined as anything that's relevant, all relevant factors. And the fact is that the court made numerous findings of fact in this matter. One of the things at the outset of her brief, appellant acknowledges that in a permanency matter, the trial court is required to make an analysis of 3 separate factors determining the best interests of a child, those being the child's interest in maintaining the parent-child relationship, the parent's interest in maintaining the parent-child relationship, and any competing interests of the child. And competing interests is a pretty broad category. It is everything from stability, environment, safety, health considerations, and if the child is old enough, the child's preference. And clearly, the court made substantial findings regarding child one's preferences. He was unequivocal that he does not want to return to the care of his mother, that he is doing very well in his foster placement. That was corroborated by the foster parent. It was corroborated by the social worker, by the guardian ad litem. The profound changes, positive changes they've seen in child one. The court made substantial findings of that. In fact, I think the court made 5 pages of independent findings of child one's testimony regarding where he is at and what he wants to see happen going forward. I think child two, who's younger, the court made at least 2 pages of specific individualized findings of child two, and acknowledge that child two is conflicted in his relationship with his mother. The court made findings from Dina McMahon, who was brought in, as already been noted, for parental capacity assessment. Appellant argues that the court weighed far too heavily on Ms. Mann's testimony in coming to its findings of best interest of the children that termination should occur here. I don't think that, in fact, is borne out by the findings. Obviously, Ms. McMahon was brought in as an expert witness specifically for that issue, but that was consistent with the opinion and testimony of the social worker and the guardian ad litem, all of whom the court found to be credible. The court found all three children of appellant to be credible. And it's noteworthy that the court makes extensive findings of fact, I think almost or more than 7 pages on appellant alone, and concludes that she is not credible in her testimony. The court found the key witness of appellant as to whether or not the incidents that precipitated the CHIPS matter never occurred, also to be not credible. The primary witness for appellant regarding this whole issue, this umbrella of therapy and involvement in family therapy with the children, the court found Mr. Hoffman credible, but then immediately determined that his opinion was of little or no value to the court, precisely because he looked at this through the lens of appellant and had almost no, if any, collateral information. And he testified that he actually believed appellant regarding the incident of August 19, 2019, and not that of the child and the other siblings. That's telling. The court found the therapist to be credible, but did not believe his opinion had value. That is not something that courts typically make. If a witness is credible, then typically the testimony of that witness adds value to the finder of fact. The court specifically went out of its way to explain why it did not believe Mr. Hoffman's opinions had value for the court in making its decision.
All right. I think your time has expired, but do you have one more statement you want to make?
Other than, Your Honor, there was in appellant's argument regarding best interests, actually does not make any analysis of the three-factor requirement by the court. It simply made conclusory statements as to why the court made insubstantial findings. And that's the position the guardian opposes. If I had more time, I would elaborate that further. But at this point, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Please.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Smith, I did look up the MDO opinion while the counsel was arguing, and on page 374, there's a brief statement that says that a psychiatrist testified that the admission of culpability should come in tandem with a psychiatric evaluation. So I think in that case, because the mother was refusing to admit to the homicide, that they were, an evaluation was not done. And as counsel indicated, that was a component of the of the case plan, and that was that she admit to her wrongdoing. But even though, as Mr. Lee pointed out, that was kind of one of our arguments here, and it was one of the frustrations I had during this trial, was that, yes, it was not a component requirement of the case plan for my client to admit that what the allegations against her from her son. But social services sure acted like it was. And they said that repeatedly, like I said, in their reports. They testified to it at trial that that was a main underlying factor in their decision to terminate parental rights, was my client's refusal to accept that responsibility. And when we get back to MDO then what did you do as a social service agency to get my client to see the light? What services did you offer her to get her on board with what you think happened? And they didn't do anything.
But what should those be besides having a diagnosis assessment where you have a professional, like,
right,
make assess the person? I mean, what,
right,
make what should referral. Literally what they should they do to force someone to see the light about what really happened?
Well, the first thing you do is you offer therapy, and that you think, if you think this assessment, because again, we're very clear, Your Honor, social services said that they did not find Mr. Kroll's assessment valid. She said that repeatedly. The guardian litem said that repeatedly during trial. They didn't find it valid. They didn't call him up and talk to him about it. They just said, we didn't find it valid. Okay, then what did you do? well, why didn't you offer her some other sort of a another testing, a more in-depth evaluation, like a psychometric evaluation, or go see a full psych eval. If you think this person's got something, she's not accepting responsibility. And she said, I didn't do anything. Well, why didn't you? Because I didn't think she'd be receptive. Well, no, you don't, as a social services agency, get to say, I don't think she would. You have to that's part of the reasonable efforts that they are required to make, is to offer the services and have the person reject them or have the person failure to comply. That's why when you have drug cases, we give drug testing on a regular basis. Even if people keep failing, we keep offering. We keep trying to get them into counseling. We keep trying to get them clean and sober.
Here, it seems, Mr. Franzese, you're sort of taking this out of context, though. I mean, the social worker had this great context of working with the mother unsuccessfully. How can you ignore the context of, you know, this decision to perhaps not make that final step?
I ignore that, as the court put it, Your Honor, because they didn't do anything. In other words, if Ms. Hughes had come to the court and said, look, you know what? I didn't buy this. I told counsel, I told her attorney, fine, I have a problem with appellant, but I told her attorney, I don't buy this. We need to have a second test done. And she ignored it. Then I don't have an argument to make. Then I can't say that they didn't provide reasonable efforts, because they did in that case. They made it known that they weren't believing the assessment and that they needed to do something more in order to reunify this family, and that more needed to be done. She didn't do anything. And, you know, getting back to Judge Hooten, when you said earlier, we were talking about finding Jay with the things that didn't happen. Those things all happened in December, January, and February. When the court looks at the February order from the district court judge, she made a specific finding of fact that my client was complying with the case plan. She made no mention of any of those problems. So when the court asked me before about, I'm speculating that if those things weren't there, and we have a different district court judge who heard the TPR trial than made that finding in April or in February, but still, those things were not an issue. Those things, that's why I'm saying, I think they're just kind of thrown in there in addition to everything else that was alleged to my client in order to make a better case, and as we say, appeal proof it.
Well, what about the in-home therapy that was offered?
Sure. And again, I'll try to make this quick. That's why I'm talking quickly.
Yes, I know.
So what happened is, again, in January, when Mr. Hoffman made a recommendation, my client's all for it. She wanted to do it. Mr. Hoffman felt very, very strongly, as he said in his email that was part of the record and as he testified to. And it was only stopped because of the child. It wasn't because my client wanted to do it. Then when it came to when they made the second recommendation, which I'll note, at that time, there's no record that they consulted the child to see if he was ready to have therapy. They just decided to do it, which then why didn't you do it in January? When they didn't do that, or when they made that offer, even if social services testified that they did not know that my client objected because of religious-based values, and it was because they didn't know that she had a problem with Lutheran social services. They knew she had a problem because her older child had to use them as for services, and the services did not go well. And it didn't go well because of the religious-based services that LSS offers. But so that maybe wasn't specifically conveyed, but it was conveyed that she knew that my client didn't want to use LSS because of the failure with her other child. And so she said, what else do we have there? She signed releases. When they say Mr. Lisa, they didn't sign my client signed the releases. She just didn't want to use LSS. And unfortunately, that's when the virus hit. So the options available were greatly reduced. But even if the court looks at it and says, okay, well, if we started that, they wouldn't have gotten until April to begin the family therapy, because that's what they said it wasn't going to start until. And by that time, you have Ms. McMahon's report come out with the things that she said, and they would have shut it down anyway. So I would, again, submit to the court, when you look at all the other things my client did do, and with the veracity, not the ferocity that she tried to get it done, she would have complied with this. This was not something that should be held against her as a parent who was simply refusing to provide to accept the services. My client knows that she needs family therapy with her child. We're asking the court to provide us with the order that this matter be remanded, and that the social services do the reasonable efforts that they're supposed to do, have my client do a psychometric evaluation, and basically start over. And I'll again emphasize too, this, we're all focused on the oldest child. There was nothing going on with the youngest child. There was fine, you know, and I would try to briefly address this, and I forgive me, I know I'm way over, but, you know, Ms. McMahon's report.
You well, are, and you did. Quiet, and you, you did discuss that in your briefing. So
one very last thing, and going, I think, with Mr. Nolan was saying, Welfare of SZ says that you're supposed to make the district court supposed to make findings which exist at the time of trial. Okay. Everything that happened, that all the evidence that's presented, everything that's in the judge's order was from a period of time after my client's father died up until the time the children were removed. All the missing of the school, the behavioral issues, all those things happened in a small window. Nothing had happened before my client's father died. Mr. Hoppen talked about that extensively. In his opinion, this is a family that was in crisis and needed better services from the county. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Well, thank you. And thank you, counsel, all of you, for your very well-done briefs and your spirited arguments here today. We will take the matter under advisement.